Now I am pleased to introduce our inspirational keynote speaker this morning, Dr. Dennis Whately. Dr. Whately has inspired, informed, challenged, and entertained audiences for more than 25 years, from the boardrooms of multinational corporations to the control rooms of NASA's space program. He has served as chairman of the Psychology of the U.S. Olympic Committee's Sports Medicine Council and has written 12 nonfiction books, including several international bestsellers. Seeds of Greatness, Being the Best, The Winner's Edge, The Joy of Working, and The Empires of the Mind. Dr. Whately is the most listened to voice on personal and career success, stressing the importance of core values and inspiring audiences to have a positive impact on those they lead and the community they serve. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Dennis Whately.
Thank you. I've traveled the world to the seven seas, been up at the top and down on my knees. When I think where I've been, what I'm going to do, I'd rather be here in Denver with you. Why? Well, because I'd be here for nothing. And I know they wish they would have known that before. Like every little boy, with my fire chief helmet and my little red fire engine with the pedals on it, I wanted to be a firefighter and then a forest ranger. Ended up being a Navy jet pilot, almost as good as a firefighter. And I had firefighters take care of me a couple of times there. But I'm so excited because I think someone who's trained Olympic athletes like I have and astronauts like I have, didn't be an astronaut, I couldn't navigate. To be an astronaut, you have to not only use the computer, but in case the computers go down, you have to use a sextant and take a star sight. And I did and got three parallel lines. And that will not help you find where you are. So I became the simulator for the astronauts, the rehabilitation coordinator for the Vietnam prisoners of war, and the trainer mentally for our Olympic athletes. And when I saw those medals given just a little while ago, my heart swelled up and I figured that the American flag was coming down, the anthem was being played, and those were gold medalists as sure as Michael Phelps is today and yesterday and tomorrow. I know what you're expecting. You're expecting someone to leap around the stage, pluck the hair out of his chest, talk about the deep hypnotic power within you. I walk up looking like Don Shula and George Blanda mutantly combined with a Pat Boone warmed over voice. And the young people say, who's George Blanda? Who's Don Shula? And who was Pat Boone? Well, I've been around a long time. I was there in 68 in Mexico City. Bob Beamon jumped nearly 30 feet. Dick Fosbury rocked back and forth, back and forth. NBC said, what is he doing? He must be frightened. No, Fosbury was watching himself go over the bar in his imagination with the famous Fosbury flop. 1972, Mark Spitz. Oh, he expected it. He was a little more, shall we say, showy than Michael Phelps. Not, in fact, firefighters are more like Michael Phelps. Very modest, unassuming, not taking any credit, featuring his mother. I'll tell you, I get so excited. I spoke to Congress. I gave him a joke. I said, you know, Congress is the opposite of progress. I said, no, hear me out. Con means against and pro means for. So if you're Congress, you're against movement, which is called gridlock. They didn't laugh, and I tried another one. I said, why is the Secretary of the Interior in charge of everything outdoors? And then Senator Kennedy walked in from the back of the room, and he noticed me, and I was fixing the podium and my PowerPoint with my red power tie and my bank loan suit. And he recognized me. And I thought, well, a Kennedy knows you. That could be an omen, but it could be a great thing, too. He motioned me down to his table like Bob Barker in The Price is Right. I felt like Tiger Woods. I walked down there and said, Senator, good to see you. How's it going? He said, "We need some more rolls and butter here." Actually, he thought I was the maitre d'. And that's something I'd like to explain to you, which is very much like a fire chief or a fire department. It's like John Wooden. John Wooden would rather be with his wife than win all the awards for UCLA basketball. Unassuming. In fact, the greatest people in life are the most modest. Because they're giving so much value away, they don't have to get that much recognition for what they do. The doing it, not the applause, is what they live for. And I really like that. The problem I have is that I look like everybody. I look like the maitre d', there's no question. People ask me where the ladies' room is. They ask me to turn the air conditioning down or up. I'm in the opera house in Sydney, Australia. A woman comes up to me, true story. I'm standing like this in the pastoral position after a great talk, and she said, "What time does Madame Butterfly go on?" I said, "What? I don't have any idea." She said, "Well, you are an usher, aren't you?" And I said, "No, I don't work here." And she said, "Little wonder with an attitude like that." But the worst one of all happened last week. I'm at Bond's Market in California. Checkout stand, true story. The checkout man looked at me and he said, "Do you know who you are?" I said, "Yeah, it's not that big a deal. Few books here, few athletes here, not that big a deal." And he said, no, oh my gosh, you're Spider-Man's uncle." I said, "What?" "No, that's Cliff Robertson. He's a little older and he died in the first 5 minutes of the movie. It's not me." Well, I am the maitre d' today, a hired gun from the outside. But I know a lot about firefighting from just experience in my own home. I live in Southern California, the land of the four seasons. Drought, fire, flood, and quake. And I thought, used to think that was funny, but it's not funny to me anymore. My house burned down. The flames were 70 feet high. The interesting thing about that, wooden glass above La Jolla Beach and Tennis Club, Santa Ana condition. Wooden glass, windy, hot. The fire department was there in 12 minutes. I was there in 20 minutes. I got the call, came home in the evening. My children are out there. The firemen had gone in. The children were in their bunny slippers and their PJs. And you know how you feel when you come into your cul-de-sac and there's rotating beacons and the big hose coming out of the hydrant? And I'm absolutely stunned until I see my wife and six children outside crying. And then the firemen went in and they got the puppies and they got the two turtles, Lightning and Streak. And they got every bit of life out. And I'm standing there and I can't help it. You would too. I went, and my banker's there in his bathrobe, and he said, "I wonder whose house it is. It's a great fire. It's on all three channels." I said, "It's my house." He said, "Oh my gosh, what are you going to do? Why are you giggling?" I said, "Giggling, they're all safe. Besides, my tax returns are in the garage, and I just got audited." And Peggy Lee sent me her album, "Is That All There Is to a Fire?" Well, that's not all there is. There's no more fire season. It's just year-round. You don't have the budget, but every talk I give throughout the rest of my life, I'm going to fight for resources and money so that you can have the kind of services and if you will, equipment that you need in order to carry through your job. I'll do it with every school. I'd rather be here than in Beijing, but I have some things to tell you just a little bit about yourselves. I promised that I would give take-home value, not just inspiration totally. Those five Olympic rings to me are not five continents. They're five characteristics of a leader, like a fire chief or like a young leader coming and aspiring to be a fire chief, like every spouse who has to wait, and not just wait, but it's very much like the spouse of someone in battle. You'd never know your, if you will, hours and hours of waiting interrupted by moments of terror and joy. The unsung heroes and heroines are not only the fire chiefs and firefighters and rescuers and the preventors, but they're also those who remain at home and support and are every bit as much of a fire chief as the chief himself or herself. I actually believe that. I know it's the strongest affiliation of all. And I was so happy to see the spouses here. After all, I overmarried too. I believe in integrity. Integrity is non-situational honesty, 24/7. When I was courting my wife, I made sure the lights were low. Candlelight looked better. A little glass of Chardonnay, of course. Walks on the beach, moonlight, lots of patience, love to dance. When men are courting women, they love to dance, knowing that women love to dance. After we get married, things change. I noticed my wife, before we were married, asked me a few questions. She said, "I noticed you're Top Gun pilot with a gun." I said, "Well, it's for safety. They take me hostage, they take me dead." I said, I'm a sincere man. I'm a quiet man. I'm a gentle man." She said, "I notice you have a big dog." I said, I'll shoot him. I like cats. "I'd rather have a cat." She said, "You like sports?" I said, "Don't like sports. Never watch them. Don't need them. Rather dance and go shopping." Then we were married. The dog slept on the bed. Watched a lot of TV with my friends. Couldn't dance anymore because of a trick knee from football. I've decided that there's one thing I want to set an example for my children and grandchildren. Always be my dream of you. Never let me wake to find untrue all this I had imagined about you. The world is full of dark occurrences and heaven-born castles crumble to the ground, yet still there lives beauty and true love, and right succeeding over wrong, we tremble at its half-forgotten sound. Please my husband, please my leader, please my politician. Don't tell me. Show me. I'd rather watch a winner than hear one any day. And I'll tell you, with 6 kids and 12 grandchildren, it's really hard. I tell my kids, clean your room, they look at my garage. I tell them not to drink, they check my eyes. I tell them to be honest, of all things, I turn on my escort radar scanner so I can speed without getting caught. No, it's really important to set the example. What if those 5 Olympic rings were 5 attitudes? And what if they were the attitudes that we need to embrace to build more leaders like yourselves in this very dangerous and challenging profession? The very first ring, Olympic ring, would be the ring of self-belief. I know that. I know there isn't an Olympian alive that didn't believe in his or her dream when that's all they had to hang on to. After all, unless you believe you're worth it, you'll never invest anything in it. You only invest in something you believe has potential. An uncut gemstone, like a diamond in the rough that you need to cut and polish. Winners believe in their dreams when that's all they have to hang on to. It can start very small. Neil Armstrong, ever since I was 12, I believed I'd do something important in aviation. Sandra Day O'Connor visiting state capitals, thinking about being a justice of the Supreme Court. It starts very early, and then it begins to pick up as you believe you're as good as the best, but no better than the rest. I happen to believe that the deep down inside the soul feeling of your own worth, regardless of your looks, your ethnicity, your religious belief, you're as good as the best, but no better than the rest. And I believe that that belief in potential leads you to read everything you can get your hands on, to spend more time investing in yourself, to represent your best self, not to wear designer clothing, but to look clean in your best. And a lot of it has to do with the way you explain yourself and the conversation you have with the most important person you'll ever talk to, which is you. There's no voice that has the critical opinion as your voice is to you. No one is as critical of a photo of you as you. And therefore, your running commentary must be from the time you wake up till the time you go to sleep, a running commentary of the mindset of a champion. Because the software drives the hardware. The software is that linguistic conversation very quietly going on. Back in 1984, I cannot believe it's been 24 years. I can't believe Mary Lou Retton's 41 with four children. I can't believe she has three little gymnasts and another one. Four children, and there she was in 84. She was only 17. I was there with her. Bella Caroli was there. Oh my gosh, it was the Pauley Pavilion, the 84 Olympics. And then I thought about her needing a 9.95 to tie the Romanian for the gold medal. No American had ever won in gymnastics, a woman in the all-around before. And she stood, and I pictured me, the sports psychologist, in her red, white, and blue bodysuit. It was a stretch. And I pictured, in front of a billion people on television, what do you say? You're 17? What do you say? Thank God it's Friday, don't work too hard. Romanians are better trained, probably on steroids. Here goes nothing. Parents are here. What a jinx. Oh, I'm getting sick to my stomach. A bronze isn't so bad. Here goes nothing. And you remember, just as we watched last night when the American gymnasts won the gold and the silver, you remember Mary Lou in front of the vault, hand over heart, right after her vault, the perfect 10. I put my arm around her, tried to get a photo op. We did it. She said, "Who are you?" I said, I'm your sports psychologist who you never went to the trainings because you were so busy doing your own training. I said, "What were you thinking just when you did it?" She said, "Just when I went to do it?" I said, "Yeah, what were you thinking?" She said, "What everyone thinks when they go to do anything." I said, "What were you thinking?" She said, "Well, let's see. Thanks for the carpool, Mom. This ball's for you." Relax, concentrate, speed, explode, extend, rotate, follow through, nail the landing. Heavy's a lead weight, light's a butterfly. This is your moment in history, just like drill. Need a 10, got a 10. Let's go. I said, "Yeah, that's what I was thinking." I want to make sure it's what you're thinking. In every day, in every way, when you're talking to your staff, your children, make sure your conversation is in the direction of the desired result. Winners dwell on the reward of success. Losers dwell on the penalty of failure. And the mind can't concentrate on the reverse of an idea, but must move in the direction of the currently dominant thought. And that's why we talk ourselves into success and out of it on a daily basis. Watch the language you're using on yourself and other people, and make sure those meetings are always encouraging and correcting to the target, not away from the target. If self-esteem, that deep-down feeling of worthiness, of affiliation with a winning team, as you saw Michael Phelps and his mother, there's no greater love on this earth than that of a mother for her child. No greater love than the affiliation between the mother nurturing and the child. And therefore, the affiliation that we have as a winning team or department, the fact that we belong to a winning country, that fact that we have pride in what we do, that affiliation, that worthiness, that identity in our own talents. And finally, the competency that we feel. The competency gives us confidence. The, if you will, belief gives us the passport to take the trip. And the confidence is learned by training. That second Olympic ring to me has always been responsibility or self-determination. I believe that that's one of the greatest problems in this country is instead of fixing the blame, we need to look in the mirror. And when we look in the mirror, we need to see who's going to be responsible for our future. It's us. Life is a do-it-with-God-for-others-to-myself project. And I can take the credit, a little bit of it, mostly it's a team effort, and the blame for being just about who I've set out to be. I'm convinced that there should be a statue of responsibility. Viktor Frankl, who led the resistance movement in Auschwitz and Dachau, you remember man's search for meaning. You remember during the Holocaust that if he gave them a responsibility for something they needed to do, to get the names of the guards, remember their facial, remember the scars, a reason to live, life's not accountable to us, we're accountable to it. That statue of responsibility would match a statue of liberty. Where should it be? On Alcatraz, of course. What a perfect place for the statue of responsibility. Statue of Liberty, New York, welcomes in the immigrants. Give me your tired and hungry, free to be, free to win, free to lose, free to choose. But the statue of responsibility should be on Alcatraz, another lady in the other harbor. And she looks out to the sea from the Golden Gate Bridge. She has an eagle in one hand. America's desire to be free, to fly free, to choose anything we want, that freedom of democracy. But in the other hand, instead of a tablet and a torch, there's an eagle and a baby. And the baby signifies our responsibility to those that follow and the future generations. There has never been a society survive its own success, because when they get on top, they forget the responsibility they need to pass on to those that look to them for leadership. And that's why I believe in that. Although I'm not the best example, I was a chauvinistic Navy pilot. I wore my flight suit to mow the lawn. I wore my helmet in the car, driving a Porsche Targa looking for Honda Civics. I wore a Viva Zapata Charles Bronson bullet belt, a Crocodile Dundee knife stuffed in my flight boot, and a scarf which got caught in the cockpit and nearly strangled me. My idea of a good time as a Navy Top Gun pilot at Miramar was to go to the Imperial Valley with some friends and pretend we were the Blue Angels. We would pick out a farmer. He's plowing soybeans, Imperial Valley, not having any fun. It's a hot day. Straight rows. He's not having any fun. Let's give him an air show. He's got an umbrella, which we use as a marker, and we come underneath the umbrella from the four points of the compass going supersonic so he can't hear us coming. We do a fleur-de-lis over his tractor and hit the afterburner straight down to see if we can levitate the tractor. A farmer is the only person that can roll off a tractor into the irrigation ditch and memorize your number going by, and then call the authorities. After a tough day at the office, I swaggered into my kitchen, grabbed a Bud from the fridge, put my helmet on the counter, slung my gun belt down. There's my wife, probably watching the soaps all day with four or five kids. I said, "I'm hungry." She said, "It's in the fridge. I'm trying to feed your daughter Gerber's strain squash, and she won't eat it." I said, "Give me that squash." "What do you mean she won't eat it? She's a seaman second class. I'm the captain." "Open up. It's your dad." Her eyes blink, but her gums clamp shut. I said, "So, you're kind of like your father, a little stubborn at times. It's okay. I'll show you how we do it at the fire department where I work." And I did what you always do with the younger people. You simulate. I ate 3/4 of the jar myself to show her how delicious it was. It's called managing by wandering about. And as I ate the squash, I made delicious chortling noises. Nearly gagged, it was red dye too. My daughter looked at me. She was 11 months old, strapped in her high chair. And I know what she was thinking. "Go ahead, Fasso, you like it, you eat it." My wife smiled, the phone rang, she left the room. Today I'd be put in prison for doing it, but if those were those days, nobody was there, just God and me and my daughter. She was strapped in. My wife wasn't there to give her any Oreo cookies or any applesauce as a commission. I pushed her cheeks together. I stuffed it quickly full of squash and held her mouth shut like every good manager would do. She decided to die by holding her breath. Her face turned red and purple. I have never been as angry in my life. I said, "Go ahead and die. You're not the only child. You're not going to hold your breath. You're going to swallow, and I'll give you 2 Oreo cookies. Come on. Breathe. You can breathe." I got close enough for her to begin to make responsible decisions. Angle, range, distance. The target was fairly large. She exhaled through the small orifice that I had created with the nozzle effect, as you remember. And a steady stream of Mount St. Helens went deep into my nasal pituitary area. I made a fatal Southern California yuppie error. I went and snorted squash. I fell convulsing on the floor, tripped on her high chair. Fortunately, I had my helmet back on. Gagging for breath, my wife said, "What happened, Top Gun?" I said, "Nothing. She doesn't like squash. Don't you make a big deal about it. Now the children have grown and flown, and they get on me all the time. And I got them for an inheritance meeting." Here's the thing to do with your kids. Have an inheritance meeting. They'll come early, dressed really well, and they'll hang on every word. And I want you to say to your children, "Your mother and I have talked, and we want you to have the same joy of earning that we've had. We'll give you all the education you can handle, but the only money you're going to get is if things get tough, because we want you to inherit what we leave in you as values instead of what we leave to you as valuables in the estate." You ought to see the looks on their face when you tell them that. And then I couldn't resist. "How do you account for the..." Like Baron Von Trapp from The Sound of Music. "How do you account for the fact your adopted sister from Mexico is doing better than most of you in school? She's from a dirt hut with broken teeth and low self-esteem. She's come in here like Disneyland and doing better than many of you. How do you account for that?" And they said, "Because we have your genes. Besides, you treated her like a customer and us like employees." And I realized something about personal responsibility. It's me. I'm going to do it now. I'm going to think it now. I'm going to plan it now. I'm going to take the responsibility for the outcome of my financial security. I'm going to chase my passion, not just my pension. Responsibility is one of the greatest things that have made this country great. If you believe in your dream, if you take over the wheel of your engine, you begin to drive, then you have the third Olympic ring, which for me, when I watch Olympians, it's incredible. It's self-direction. It is focus. There's no question it is goal setting. You got to have a dream if you're going to make a dream come true. And the winners in life have specificity. It's not vague. It isn't nebulous. It is specific. It is just out of reach, but not out of sight. It's another split. It's another partial second off. The bar is raised a little at a time. Remember, high jump, pole vault, raise it a little at a time. Get the experience of going over, raise it a little more. Low goal, short term. Always having that target in front of you. One of the most important things I've learned is to be specific. How much? When? Goals need to be measurable. They need to have a beginning and a completion. They need to be things that are so internalized that it's almost like a magnificent obsession. But unless you have a goal, somebody else's goal will be your goal. You must have that goal that's real to you, because you'll never do anything with emotion that has been decided by something else. It has to be within. We call it winning from within, or the Olympian within. The goal of 7 gold medals was Mark Spitz, and perhaps it's 8 for Michael Phelps. I think that he takes each one at a time. I think he completes one before he goes on to the other, and I think he stays in the moment. But I can't think of anything more important than self-direction, specificity. I've looked at CAT scans of human brains, and when they have something specific, it goes to long-term memory if it's repeated. And that's where the next ring comes in. If you believe that belief in yourself, if you believe that limits are physical and limitations are psychological, and if you know that you'll never outgrow the limitations you set, but only set new ones within which you must live. Limitations are self-imposed, and you don't outgrow those. You keep them until you stretch and get out of your comfort zone. We all need to get out of our comfort zones, and I'll tell you, what I like about fire chiefs and fire prevention and firefighters and rescuers, politicians tell you what you want to hear. Leaders tell you what you need to know. Politicians want you to vote for them and love them. Leaders want you to vote for yourself and respect yourself. Politicians will tell you what they'll do for you, and leaders tell you what you must do for yourself, in a world accelerating and fast forward, with more changes in one day than a decade of our grandparents' lives. If you believe in self-esteem, I'm worthy of the best, but no better than the rest. If you have the responsibility for the outcome, no matter what it is, rather than fixing the blame. If you have the specificity of purpose, then that fourth thing is what you saw in the Chinese in the opening ceremonies. You saw that maybe is the one thing that is common in an Olympian, but uncommon in most average citizens. And that is the ring of self-discipline. Discipline isn't doing without, it's doing within when you're without. Of all the things I learned with the Apollo program and the Olympic program, no train, no gain. If you do it right in drill, you'll do it right in life. Habits are comfortable beds, easy to get into, difficult to get out of. A habit is a cobweb. With practice, it becomes a cable to strengthen or shackle our lives. And habits aren't broken, they're replaced with new information on top of the other, layer after layer, until it becomes a subconscious reflex. I can guarantee you the Olympic athletes do not try to win. They remember. Winning is muscle memory. It's setting yourself free to do what you've already learned to do. And you've learned it, and so you're concentrated and focused in the moment in this zone that has no future and no past. That's why I believe self-discipline is the missing ingredient, but not missing in what you do. It's probably why you do what you do. I took my family, grandchildren, to Africa on safari. I like to do things like that. Took my grandchildren there, but the Maasai were there in the middle of the Maasai Mara. And there were a lot of lions, and it was okay as long as I was in the Range Rover. But when he suggested that we go for a walk on the wild side, I said, I've got a trick knee from football, and I may stay and take long-range photos with my zoom lens. No, we're going for a walk. I said, but all you have is a spear and a one-shot rifle. That won't do it for me. I said, there are 19 lions lying under that acacia tree. He said, they're not hungry. I said, there's always an aberration in nature. I said, one didn't eat last night, and he's been watching me. He said, they smelled you a half hour ago. They've been tracking you. I said, I know. That's just it. I pushed my grandchildren in front. Give them some hors d'oeuvres. Maybe they won't want the main course. He said, why are you afraid? I said, why am I afraid? Because I don't know what I'm up against. I don't know my environment. And the one thing that strikes me of the similarity between an astronaut, a firefighter, and an Olympian is that courage is based on preparation. You're courageous because you're well trained. And when you're well trained, you're not afraid of the unknown. And the Maasai guides were comfortable. They'd lived there all their lives. They weren't worried about the lions. We walked up and turned left and walked away. I said, I feel like running. He said, go ahead. The rest of us will be safe. And I was sweating, and he said, Dennis, you're a tourist. You need more experience, training, and knowledge than you can be a tour guide. And I'm tired of being a tourist in a challenging whitewater world. I want to be a tour guide, like a fire chief. I want to be a leader who understands and knows and prepares and contingency planning. And that's why self-discipline is so fantastically important to an astronaut going somewhere that no one's gone before. We put Neil Armstrong on top of a Redstone rocket. And of course, we joke. And you know, I kind of have a Bob Newhart kind of thing. I like to joke. And we said, Neil, we're going to shoot you 250,000 miles up and back in something built by the lowest bidder. I said, we were going to use a chimpanzee, but because of animal rights, we're sending you. He said, it's not funny. Will you get us back? We said, just like drill. It worked in practice, because practice makes permanent. And that's why golfers do it, and that's why Olympians do it, and that's why astronauts do it, and that's why fire chiefs are doing it with everyone they train. It's a reflex action. Sure, there's a lot of on the spot, if you will, spontaneous action. But a lot of it comes from the courageous training that has preceded it. That's why self-discipline isn't doing without, it's doing within. I work with our prisoners of war coming back from Vietnam, and you should have seen them coming back. They played the piano that had no keyboard, played guitars that had no strings. And you remember Colonel Hall, George Hall, four handicap golfer, usually shot about 76, four over par. I couldn't believe it. He was atrophied and withered. Went to the New Orleans Open and played in the New Orleans PGA Pro-Am after 5.5 years in solitary confinement. But he played one round of golf in his mind in his cell every day for 5.5 years. Replay, the best. Pre-play, pro. Replay, your best. Pre-play, professional. The mind can't distinguish something that is vividly imagined and the real thing. It stores as fact that which has been vividly repeated. Simulation, internalization, realization. He's released. He can hardly wait to play. He's a little weak and atrophied. He shoots a 76, four over par, right onto his handicap. The news media is astounded. Colonel, over here, sir, congratulations. Beginner's reentry luck. He said, luck, hell, I never three-putted a green in 5.5 years. Sir, did you have a golf course at the Hanoi Hilton? He said, we all have one. In your imagination, you never miss. Playing within when you're without creates the very thing you want to occur. That's why discipline is doing within. If you take, and if you think about it, if you edify the people that you're with, if you increase their lives in everything you do, if they know that your goal is to increase them and to raise, if you will, their own self-esteem, and if your explanatory method is positive, and if you're always looking at desired result, if you take responsibility for the outcome and you help other people do the same by not doing it for them, but giving the patience so that they will learn to do it for themselves, your children especially. Don't tie their shoes because you're in a hurry. Let them make the effort to do it. Don't make their beds. Let them make their bed, and don't pay them for cleaning their rooms. Mother doesn't get paid to cook dinner. They don't get paid for cleaning their room. It's all part of the responsibility of family. Allowances, of course. Don't pay for grades. You give them special treats. You want to pay your children for anything, pay them for reading a book and give you a book report. Pay them to learn and to reach out, but don't pay them to do things that are responsible around the house. That's what we need. People who say, if it is to be, it's up to me. I take the credit. That's why winners make it happen, losers let it happen. And the goals are so important, especially in prime time. Winners do things that are goal achieving. Losers do things that are tension relieving. And that most important moment of time is in the evenings from 6 to 11 p.m., called prime time. You and I, especially you, are busy serving other people. At the drop of a hat, you're there. If you spend almost all your life helping other people achieve their goals, when do you get yours? The only time you have is during your free time, which I call prime time. Do less TV watching and more networking. Do more reading and less just watching. Spend more time with intimacy, with family. Get off the couch and out to ethnic restaurants. Don't be a spectator. Get in the game, whatever it is that you have. And that's why goals are so important. Discipline, as we said, was doing within. And finally, the last ring would be the ring of dimension, self-dimension, or perspective. You saw Michael Phelps do so well. But remember, in the relay, he got a pretty good start. And then the others were coming. But the last swimmer, the oldest swimmer, the one who didn't get any big hoopla, was the one that stepped forward and made that amazing last-minute burst to win for the team. Although he only won a bronze afterward because he kind of took it all out of him. He put it all into the relay for the team so that the team and Michael could continue this run for gold. I like the idea of team, and I can't think of anything more important than your team. You and your spouse, you and your significant other, you and your children, you and your department, chiefs and new leaders coming up. Dimension. Looking beyond for meaning in life. My goal in life is to plant shade trees under which I know I'll never sit. to make sure that I can't keep knowledge, I have to keep spreading it. And we have to understand what's going on in China. A lot's going on. They're learning more high-tech than we are. They have 1 million students graduating in technology. They go back to school in the evenings. All the kids go back to school. Sure, they have less freedom, but they have more determination and more discipline. And they learn how to work as a team. They're not just individually motivated, which is a lot like you. And I have to tell you, I really would be here for nothing. And as a keynote, the best take-home I can give you is dialogue. When you meet with each other in your business or at home, give everyone an opportunity to speak. Make sure there's a suggestion system. I used to tell kids where we're going on vacation. I don't do that anymore. I let them give me input. I'm talking less and listening more. And when I'm speaking, I'm asking more questions. When I speak, I learn nothing. I simply present. But when I ask questions, I listen and I learn. And the more we collaborate, the more dialogue you have, the more the young people get a chance to speak. Sometimes the lowest paid people closest to the problem have some of the best ideas. And that's why there's no dumb question and no bad idea. I was there in Lake Placid in 1980. I remember Herb Brooks was in the locker room. I was sitting quietly. He said, you know, the Russians beat you 10-3 in Madison Square Garden, and they're professionals, and they're in the Army, and they've been together for 15 years, and you're only 21.7 years. But let me tell you what's going to happen. Oh, I don't want your life. I just want the next 70 minutes. And here's what you're going to do. You're going to take it to them. You're going to outskate them. They're so overconfident that you're going to be quick, and I'm going to substitute often. And you're going to blind them with your speed and your agility because you're young. You've got youth and dynamism and enthusiasm going for you. And you are my gold medal winners. And they were so young, they just believed the chief. What he expected of them, you know, you won't get what you want in life. You get what you expect in the long run. And when I saw the Miracle on Ice back in 1980, I thought, this is where we want to be. We want to be team players and bring the gold to the team. You can fly if you try. You can soar with the eagles if you dare. You can run with the turkeys who don't care. You can sit in front of a TV set or reach the goals that you have set. You can fly. If you try getting high on your dreams, while they sit in the shadows full of dope, you'll run with your spirits full of hope. While they sit around in life just wishing, you'll grab your pole and start in fishing. You can fly if you try. It doesn't matter who you are. Spread your wings and you'll go far. You can fly if you try. That's the spirit of the American Eagle, soaring to greater heights. What a thrill and honor it is for me to be with you, the unsung Olympians, with the real gold medals. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. That was great. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.